I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Peter Hirschfeld. Back in 2015, a personal finance company called NerdWallet decided to rank the 10 most innovative tech hubs in the United States. They looked at factors like the number of tech patents being filed by residents of specific cities and the amount of venture capital invested per capita. Only two East Coast cities made the list: Boston, Massachusetts, and, surprise, Burlington, Vermont. To the untrained eye, Vermont might not look like a thriving tech hub, but a closer look reveals a thriving ecosystem of cutting-edge thinkers and companies. It's a sector that many see as Vermont's best hope for long-term economic prosperity, but it also faces some serious challenges. Today on Vermont Edition, two bright minds from the Vermont tech world are going to help us understand where the industry is today and where it might be going in the future. Marguerite Dibble is the CEO of Game Theory, a Vermont company that creates games and provides consulting to companies based on insights from the world of gaming. Artur Adib has worked remotely for Twitter and Mozilla from Vermont. His new project is called All You Can Tech, which provides a curated map and catalog of Vermont tech companies, jobs, and events. Marguerite, Artur, welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. And we should mention here at the outset that Marguerite's companies, Game Theory and Alder, have both done paid consulting work for VPR. It is a small state, so we'll have that from time to time. The word tech is going to be used very liberally over the next 45 minutes or so here. So let's start right there. Artur, what are we talking about when we talk about tech?
That's a great question. I actually get that question a lot. But I think that one really pragmatic way of looking at it is if you look at the sort of employee breakdown of the companies, the first thing is that we look for when we want to say it's a tech company is, do they really build their own technology? Any company can have, obviously, like an IT or two IT people. But then if the majority of the employees are in sales or operations, that's typically not a tech company. But if you look at the, for example, on LinkedIn and see what kind of employees they have, if the majority or a good chunk of it is on the engineering space, then it probably is a tech company. So that's sort of the pragmatic criterion that we use. We really look at the sort of employees that go and work for that company.
I was checking out a report, Marguerite, by the Vermont Technology Alliance. It tried to quantify the role that tech plays in the Vermont economy, and it says the sector is responsible for more than 77,000 jobs in Vermont, which seemed very high to me. It's a quarter of all employment in Vermont, more than tourism and agriculture combined. Do these jobs, all of them, fit the definition that you use for tech, or are your efforts at building this sector focused on a smaller subset of that industry?
Yeah, so with our company, I think it is probably more pure tech than some companies that are out there. But I think one of the things that's cool about the Vermont tech ecosystem is you see this real diversity in how technology is being used. We're coding games every day. That's pretty high tech. But there's other companies you'll see like Seed Sheets out of Middlebury that has sheets you put down full of seeds to grow gardens. But that's a tech company because that's all enabled through a website and that's their whole business model. So I think you see a lot of those interesting crossovers between different sectors of the ecosystem and the economy that tech enables.
Where is the Vermont tech universe right now as it relates to some of these companies that you're talking about compared to where it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, Marguerite?
Yeah, well, let's see. 5 years ago, I was just starting my company. 10 years ago, I was graduating high school. So I might not have quite the perspective that some people do. But I think it's really pretty explosive. I mean, just a couple of years ago, people were like, oh, technology is an option. But now, I mean, you're hearing of awesome new startups pretty much every day that are coming out of schools, people who are relocating back to Vermont to be able to live the lifestyle they want and pursue an entrepreneurial goal, an entrepreneurial dream. So it's been pretty exciting just in the 5 years since we've been started to see how much this ecosystem has really thrived.
Artur, we all have a tendency in the state to be Vermont exceptionalists, but does Vermont really have something different going on in terms of the way its tech industry is growing right now? Are we an outlier from other cities across the country, or are we more is what's happening here also happening in lots of other places too?
I think it is happening in a lot of other places, and we, you know, the sort of technology landscape that I tend to see in Vermont is mostly around B2B companies, at least, you know, for most of the tech companies that are listed on our catalog, at least. And so,
and that's business to business, yeah?
Business to business, that's correct, yeah, as opposed to business to consumer. And so I do see this happening in a lot of places that are not traditionally associated with tech per se outside of Silicon Valley. They tend to go more towards selling to businesses. So I think it's sort of a natural thing that's happened to us in Vermont. I do think that we're right up there with some of the other places that are developing tech recently too.
So Artur, what does Vermont have going for it that is lending itself to this sort of sector growth? What are the unique characteristics that you see that lend it to being a good place for tech entrepreneurs like yourself?
Yeah, so you know, that's a really good question that I started diving into recently because, like I said, like you guys mentioned, I had been working remotely for the last 6 years for tech companies outside of the state. But meanwhile, I had been trying to connect and network with folks locally and always keeping an eye on what was happening. And one of the surprising things that I noticed is year after year, I kept meeting these incredible companies across the state. And I was constantly taken aback. I'm like, well, how could I not have heard about you before? I really have been going out of my way and all of that. And so that's really like one of the interesting things that came out of this experience working remotely and connecting with folks locally is realizing that the tech landscape is a lot bigger than what I imagine it was, and I'm pretty sure for most folks that don't have that exposure inside of the state, they probably have a sense that it's a bit smaller. And so when I put together the catalog over the summer, I was blown away by the kinds of companies that I saw. And we just crossed over 100 companies listed on the site. And again, the community has been really providing a lot of feedback and adding more content. And so it really stands out to me, like, for example, that we have a variety. It's actually one of my our most popular categories on the site. It's medical and health. So we have almost 20 companies listed there that are doing tech in that space. And I, you know, it would be really interesting to dive into why that is the case, but a pretty good sort of guess as to how that happened is probably because of the exit of IDX years ago. There are probably several past employees that went on and started companies. And the same thing probably happened with IBM. There's quite a bit of companies in the sort of electronics and manufacturing sector that are starting up or have started up and are doing really well. And so those are the two top categories that really stood out in the catalog. And I think a lot of it comes out of big exits like those, IDX or a big employer like IBM.
Marguerite, Artur offered a couple of theories there as to why Vermont is well-positioned to be such a fertile ground for some of these tech companies. Do you see other characteristics, assets that this state brings to the game that is allowing companies like yours to thrive?
Yeah, so for me, I come at it from a little bit of a millennial perspective. I think that our workplace dynamics are changing and evolving as we enter next generations. And what I see amongst my peers and people who are my age is we're really seeking a better work-life balance than I think has been presented to us previously. You see some of these models in places like Silicon Valley with these campus tech hubs where you're really supposed to, you know, work, play, eat, live all at your company. And you're seeing people start to trend away from that more currently. You're seeing people start to emphasize this idea of having a really strong work-life balance and that enables stronger productivity and better work in the tech sector. And so for me, I think Vermont is really uniquely positioned to thrive in that area with remote work and opportunities for entrepreneurs that are just more accessible because of the small size of the state. The fact that you can live here, have this gorgeous life, have a beautiful place that surrounds you, and you can pursue your dreams still, that's pretty compelling. And I think that's going to make Vermont competitive in this space if it owns it.
Yeah. Well, does it also create a competitive disadvantage? I mean, I imagine there are good reasons why these giant tech companies have fostered this type of culture, right? All work, no life. How can Vermont companies be offering their employees a work-life balance without suffering the ill effects of not having people at their beck and call 24 hours a day?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably arguments on either side in terms of if it's a pro or a con. There have been plenty of studies that have shown that if employees have a better work-life balance, productivity does increase. There's been some interesting work lately that points to actually a shorter hours per work week will increase productivity within an individual company. So I think that you could point to either. Obviously, density in cities is an advantage to businesses. There's just more people to sell to. But I think we're working towards a more remote world. I mean, technology enables a lot. My company is able to exist in Burlington. We have remote workers across the country, and I travel to cities, and we get stuff done. And I think that's pretty cool. And I think it's going to be something that people will start to seek out more if they know that it's an option.
Artur, do you see people burning out afar and deciding that maybe Vermont is a better place to be?
Listen, I completely agree with what Marguerite was saying. I think actually that explains some of the successes that we've seen with other cities that have attracted tech talent like Boulder, Colorado, or Portland, Oregon. Those places are booming. Their tech scene is booming, and a lot of large employers are going there. And it's partly because they sell the lifestyle as part of the package, and people tend to be attracted to that. And so it's almost like they don't have a choice. You know, there's only so much talent that they can poach from each other in Silicon Valley. And so they have to reach out to folks that are, you know, not necessarily buying into that. And they want to live where, you know, there are things like farm to table and great breweries and a great outdoor lifestyle. And so it's almost like they have to. And additionally, I would say, too, here in Vermont, we have great schools that are probably the most successful recruiters of young talent into the state. And so, you know, I personally have placed a couple of folks out of Middlebury and Champlain College into my past employers. And I think they're phenomenal, and it's largely an untapped sort of resource right here in the state. And I would love to see more companies come and see what we got there.
We have Ken calling in from Essex. Ken, what do you have to add?
Ken? I'm 35.
Hey.
When I was 27. My wife and I actually left Vermont. I used to work for a software company in Colchester. And the cost of living became prohibitive to, you know, stepping into kind of what we thought was the next adult phase.
Cost of living in Vermont, Ken, you're talking about?
Yeah, living in Vermont. So I think I would like to get your guys' thoughts on the fact that the cost of living here is a huge barrier for young talent, at least in my opinion. You know, I've worked in Indianapolis. I traveled a lot. And you go to some of these other cities where you see big tech hubs. And for me, one of the things in Vermont that I've found and even interviewing for remote positions is, you know, the cost of living is akin to places like in Massachusetts or other, you know, larger cities. And sometimes the pay scales just aren't enough to attract that talent here. So, you know, you're hanging on the lifestyle, but sometimes the cost of living here is really prohibitive to bring young, new, fresh talent to the area. And you begin to see companies start to open up other hubs. You know, DDC opened up hubs in Dallas, you know, when the DealerTrack acquisition went through. And other software companies are looking at remote options. So I'm curious to think what you think about the barrier of entry for young talent into this market.
Marguerite, is this, in your experience, a real problem?
Absolutely. I mean, the cost of living in the Burlington area is a huge problem, especially for people who are my age, right? You're sort of in your 20s. You're looking to sort of get established, get settled, and it is massive. I mean, I've had employees who have had to move back with their parents in other parts of New England for a month at a time because their landlords kicked them out of places early and there's just nowhere available in Burlington. So it creates huge obstacles to young people. The sort of flip side of that is it's a huge opportunity if Burlington can nail it and if it can get it under control, because some of these other tech centers, I mean, places like San Francisco, we all know how intense the cost of living is getting in those areas. And you're seeing polls come out of San Francisco where people that are my age, they want to leave. They don't want to be there. And part of that is that cost of living that is so much higher and that desire for a lifestyle-oriented focus. So I think that it's a huge challenge right now. And if Burlington can address it, the surrounding sort of Burlington, Chittenden County area, because that's where a lot of these jobs are and that's where a lot of the challenges are with cost of living, that's a huge opportunity that can be seized.
Artur, what do we need exactly in your mind to fill that gap in terms of affordable housing? What I mean, do you have a sense of the number of units we need, the price point for those units?
I don't have anything off the top of my head, but I think it all makes sense. It's sort of a chicken and egg problem, right? So we talk about not having competitive salaries and a higher cost of living. So if we don't do something about it, then it will be increasingly harder for us to attract that young talent into a place like Burlington or even like in rural areas. I think that there's a whole new theme around that. But I do think that, having some sort of incentive for young talent to come in the state and be able to afford to stay will sort of break that chicken and egg problem, because then employers are going to be more successful with the recruiting, and their business is going to thrive, and they're going to be able to pay better wages. And so I do think that's a great way to sort of jumpstart that solution, is to really provide for more affordable housing for young folks who are trying to come in.
Artur, you wrote recently in an op-ed about the fact that some of the efforts that you're undertaking aren't about throwing big tax incentives at corporations to try to lure them or keep them
Yep.
here. That said, does this state need to make some potentially big public investments in infrastructure, be it broadband, housing, cell service, in order to eliminate some of the barriers that might otherwise allow this sector to get to the next level?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think so. I mean, this is right up the alley of my friend Matt Dunn and some of the efforts that he's been working on across the state. And I do feel like infrastructure is obviously like the foundation of anything you layer on top of that. And in my experience being here and seeing, this is more sort of a personal sort of touch on all of this, is I keep seeing all these young, super talented kids coming out of the schools. And so I would love to see something that provides them with a pathway, not just for employment, but for entrepreneurship as well, to come out of school. You know, kids out of school don't need a whole lot of money to prove ideas out, at least in the digital space. $20,000-$30,000 for a summer for two or three kids, they can go a long way. I do feel like we have this machinery of recruiting young people into the state that is the colleges, and I think there's a lot of opportunities there to actually keep them in the state and not do placements outside of the state.
Today, we're talking about the tech industry here in Vermont, and we're joined by two voices from that industry, Artur Adib and Marguerite Dibble. We've got John calling in from Montpelier. John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I've got an idea that I think would not just be the right thing to do, but would explode the tech industry in Vermont. I'd love to get folks' thoughts on. It's something I feel kind of strongly about, and I've talked to a few people and gotten some heads nodding, but haven't pushed it hard yet, although I may start pushing it hard in this legislative session. It seems to me that if Vermont were to get out in front and take the initiative and pass some serious and I know this is a challenging issue, but protections for women in the industry who are just harassed to a surreal degree sometimes. I mean, the whole Gamergate phenomenon, it just is showing no signs of abating. And, of course, it runs, you know, the doxing, the swatting. It's run plenty of women right out of tech. And I think there's even some numbers that suggest that the number of women getting into tech as a result of this is starting to plateau. I just think there's an opportunity there to send a really strong message. Open up, you know, increase the possibility for, you know, criminal might be challenging, but civil cases against, you know, somebody's individual or the ISPs that are hosting them, just to send the message that Vermont is not just a tech space, but a safe space, a safe working environment for women in technology would be tremendous. I'd just love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, thank you for the call, John. Marguerite, before we get to this issue of what can be done about this problem, I want to get your perspective. There are plenty of tech companies out there that have well-earned reputations as being extremely hostile places for women to work. Do we see a similar dynamic playing out on the tech scene here in Vermont?
So it is a huge challenge and a big issue nationally. Thanks for bringing up Gamergate. That's obviously a big concern for people who work in my industry. Many of my friends and peers were personally targeted by Gamergate, and that's it's a big problem. In terms of related to the state, I think that all tech sector areas, all workplaces need to really critically look at this issue. You'll see things pop up from time to time in the tech sector here that do present challenges that are a little bit close-minded in terms of the inclusivity that they want to represent.
Can you think of a specific example that might sort of illustrate by example for folks what you're talking about?
In terms of specific examples, I won't name any names, but there was a tech firm that had some holiday party stuff that wasn't super inclusive for women a couple of years ago. You know, and it's the type of thing where when people who are in charge of these firms, when someone brings it to their attention, they're like, oh, my God, we had no idea. We didn't realize that this was an issue. Right. And then they immediately want to address it, which I think is one of the advantages to this Vermont ecosystem. And I think this is an area where Vermont could lead. I think that one of the advantages to Vermont is that we are small and we are nimble and we are flexible because of that. We don't have a lot of entrenched cultural issues to the extent that other tech hubs do because we just aren't that big. And so I think that if Vermont had wanted to, it could really own this image of a truly inclusive female tech center, which I think could be a real brand differentiator and could really make it stand out in a way that would be very powerful nationally and that, you know, someone really ought to.
John is talking about maybe having some kind of public policy intervention that would bring this kind of world about that you're talking about. Are there specific things that you think could be done at a policy level that would help facilitate this kind of world that you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging because sometimes, you know, the areas where women have to deal with a lot of harassment are internet places that are sort of amorphous and that I think it would be hard for the state control. I mean, Gamergate through Twitter is obviously one of the biggest platforms, and that's a separate corporation and you can't necessarily affect it that much. But, you know, I think if you look at what happened at Uber, so many of the issues there with the female employees were just related to HR's response and how the corporate higher ups dealt with that challenge. And I think those are things that the state could look at critically and try and establish some parameters around. But I think also there are just principles generally that aren't necessarily super tech specific that would help foster a really good community for women in technology, such as early childhood education and childcare. If you can provide those opportunities for women so they can work professionally and they can have accessibility to these careers, that's going to do a ton for the tech sector.
Matthew is calling in from Williston. Matthew, I gather you have some thoughts on the Vermont tech brand.
Yeah, some of the callers have flagged some of the challenges, one of which is obviously the expense. And I just wanted to say, the question came, what are some of the barriers? And I think that we've done a great job in building Brand Vermont, but to a certain degree, it's been kind of come recreate my rural yesteryear. And that's driven by our strengths in the agriculture and like our strengths in travel and tourism. But we haven't kind of developed at the state level an infrastructure that really thinks about Brand Vermont in a broader way, in a way that could be more inclusive to tech.
Artur, you are part and parcel of this industry, and you yourself were talking earlier about how shocked and surprised you were to see how many tech companies there actually are in Vermont. Why is this state struggling so mightily to establish itself as a tech-friendly hotbed? And what do you think folks like you, folks in promotion and at the Agency of Commerce can do to rectify that?
Yep. No, I think that's a great question. I'm actually talking to the Agency of Commerce, and I think there are really some interesting ways in which we can work together to really highlight, first of all, what we already have, celebrate what we have. I think All You Can Tech, the fact that it was a side project and it became really a business due to the community feedback and the desire to get the word out about this. I think it really goes to say that we didn't really have as much of a celebration of what we already have. And so if we can send this message out to nearby states, like in particular the cities of Boston and New York, that there is another way of doing this, and there's a great lifestyle that comes associated with that. I think it would be a big win for us. I think that Portland, Oregon, again, was very successful at this. There's almost an exodus of folks going from Silicon Valley to Portland, and I think we have an opportunity here to do the same for Boston and New York. So stay tuned. I'm definitely chatting with the state, and the state is thinking actively about this right now.
Dean is posting a message on Vermont Edition Facebook page. He says, Burlington's position is no accident. We control our own electric utility and, so far, our own fiber network. Keeping and expanding these critical underpinnings of all entrepreneurial businesses is essential. As a CTO of an out-of-state business, I think expanding such services statewide will serve all of Vermont very well. And that leads into a question that I wanted to ask both of you. You are working out of Burlington right now. You've got a 1 gigabit gigabit internet connection at the Vermont Center for Emerging Technologies. What about Franklin County? What about Bennington, southern Vermont, Marguerite, where you grew up? To what extent are opportunities to do what folks like you and Artur are doing right now hampered and stymied by the fact that you don't have the infrastructure that is really needed to make it happen?
Yes. I mean, I am actually moving back to southern Vermont. I just on Monday closed on a really beautiful piece of land right next to where I grew up, and I'm going to build a house and I'm going to move back, and I'm going to commute to Burlington for half the week, and then I'm going to work from home remotely the other half of the week. And it's going to be possible. I think that 1 gig sounds really great, and that is important, but it doesn't have to be to that level in order to make things successful. I mean, if you're able to get just a good basic internet connection and cell service, it's sort of, you know, quantity, not quality, right? If you can get depth there across the state, I think that's going to serve a lot of people really well. As long as I've got 10 megs that I can work with at my home office, sort of in the middle of nowhere, I'm good, and I can make that work. And I think that a lot of people would be able to. And what I'm excited about is the possibility to be in southern Vermont, to spend a couple days up in Burlington, but be able to hopefully spend some of my time and energy contributing in different parts of the state, to be able to help in Springfield and in Bennington, and to see what we can start to grow in those areas. Because I think when we talk about cost of living, et cetera, Burlington is great, and it's had huge success in the tech sector, and I love working in Burlington, but there are other parts of Vermont that I think could really seize that opportunity and could see some of that growth if given the chance.
Artur, I often hear people lament about the fact that broadband isn't what it needs to be in a lot of places in this state to be able to do the kind of business that you and Marguerite are doing. Marguerite says she's found a way to make it work in southern Vermont. Is she an outlier, or are those opportunities becoming more expansive?
No, I would actually agree with Marguerite. I was, I was talking to Matt Dunn about this when we met last week, and there's probably a small percentage of businesses that actually can leverage that type of bandwidth. That would be businesses that involve a lot of videos and super high quality media. But for most online tech businesses, I think that what Marguerite said is generally true. It's, you don't need more than that. You do need access to it. You need relatively inexpensive access to those connections, but you really don't need a gigabit. You can probably get away with 10, 50 megabits per second, and it will go a long way. So I do think that it's more around coverage and access and price point as opposed to how big is the pipe. Although that said, if you're making an investment to expand, obviously one that to last, for the next 10, 20 years. So it obviously doesn't hurt to have a bigger pipe.
Marguerite, you've been in business now for 5 years, 10 employees, is that correct?
Yep.
What's next? There are a lot of companies, tech companies in Vermont that have gotten right up to that kind of size and then decided, you know what, in order to make this thing what I want it to be, I'm going to have to go out to Boulder. I'm going to have to go out to San Jose or New York City. What's the future for you, and to what extent does it hinge on whether or not Vermont can give you what you need in the way of workforce and everything else?
Yeah, totally. I mean, That is a really critical moment for my company and for a ton of other Vermont tech firms that I have seen. That sort of scale of, all right, we're about 10 people, we're doing pretty good. How do we grow now? How do we become a larger company? And for some people, the answer is yes, relocating to another area with higher density. For me, that's personally not the answer. I love Vermont. I'm going to be in Vermont no matter what because this is my place and this is where I like to be. But I want my company to be successful and I want it to be able to provide more young people with really great jobs they love in the state so the state can thrive. And I think that that's going to take some doing. And I think that the state could really improve the resources that it makes available to companies such as mine in order to have more companies make that jump from that small company to maybe that medium scale company. I think that something that I'm seeing more of is people who are starting businesses to fill in gaps around that scaling challenge. We're working with some consultants who do sort of the role of a sales and marketing team, but they do that for three or four startups such as ours. So instead of my team having to find the resources to hire a whole new team, which is a big leap, we can just use another startup. So I think little innovations such as that will help. But I think also the state's going to have to help give us a little bit of a leg up, right? Help us make those sales, make those pushes in those bigger areas so that we can bring that growth inside the borders.
Talk to me about what that looks like. How specifically would the state be able to help you realize through these resources what you need to do in order to get where you want to go?
I mean, to connect a couple of two random dots, what Artur was saying about just visibility, you know what I mean? The state has tourism and marketing dollars that it's pushing out nationally to draw people to ski areas. It could also maybe brag about a couple of the cool startups that it's got going on right here, and we could get some visibility nationally. There's other ways like sending startups to conferences and tech centers to market the state and what they do. So I think there are some possibilities. But really the most simple one is just recognizing that we're here, and that we're doing our best to make this state thrive in new ways and giving us the tools and the access to help define what that looks like and then to make it possible, I think would go a long way.
Artur, Marguerite talks about the difficulty getting beyond this 10 to 15 employee range. I mean, in your view, does a lot of that have to do with lack of access to people that can do the jobs you need them to do?
I believe, and Marguerite can speak to that a lot better. She's been plugged in for a while, but I see with even larger employers. So I've been having the fortune of talking to wonderful employers in the state since I started All You Can Tech, and one of them is, for example, Entopia, who just crossed 100 employees recently, and they have an office in Stowe and an office in Burlington. They are doing exceedingly well in their space, and still they have a hard time hiring talent. So I do believe that this is a space where the state can come in and sort of help, because they can sell, obviously, they can sell the company, their culture, and all of that, which does stand out. But the state can also help sell with a lifestyle, you know, so that folks that are, you know, stuck in that crazy lifestyle in New York and Boston can come here and see, hey, not only do they have these great companies, but they also have this, you know, incredible lifestyle with, you know, a really great culture, farm to table, and so on and so forth. So I do feel like that's an opportunity. And again, I do know that the state is thinking about this and we're talking. And so there's probably an opportunity for us to work together on that.
Our time is running short. Before I let you both go, I want to ask you, Artur, coolest thing you're seeing at sort of the burgeoning stage in the Vermont tech scene right now that you think has the potential to be a product or a company that a lot of people are going to be talking about in 5 or 10 years?
I don't want to keep hammering on the same note, but I do think that I'm super excited about Entopia. I think that, you know, we people that have spent a lot of time in Vermont are used to hearing about the sort of big players in tech like Dealer.com and MyWebGrocer. And I do feel like Entopia is starting to get to that stage, and they're going to go far and beyond. So I'm super excited about that. I think, you know, I personally have seen their offices and the culture that they have, and I think it's a name that it's going to be a sort of a household name in the state, along with those two that I mentioned.
And quickly, Marguerite, who do you have your eye on?
Yeah, so we share our office space with a group of young game developers called Sunday Month, and they were nominated for some of the biggest awards in the game industry this year, which is a really exceptional accomplishment. They're super talented, and I think that they're going to do very good stuff.
Exciting stuff going on in the world of Vermont tech. Marguerite Dibble, Artur Adib, thanks for telling us about it. We really appreciate having you here.
Thanks a lot.